The United Nations Security Council has approved a US-drafted plan for Gaza, backing a new international stabilisation force and a so-called Board of Peace to oversee security and reconstruction. Hamas has rejected the resolution, describing it as foreign control, while Israel says it will only support the plan if Gaza is fully demilitarised. The resolution leaves major questions unanswered, including who will deliver aid, who will govern Gaza, and how the devastated territory will be rebuilt. Daniel Forty is a senior UN analyst at the International Crisis Group, and he co-authored a report last week that warned the US plan was unclear and risky. I spoke to Daniel earlier this morning.
Thank you very much.
What do you make of this UN vote? What will it mean for the population of Gaza in the coming weeks, in your view?
Right now, the Security Council resolution that was just adopted yesterday is an important way of internationalizing Trump's peace plan and attempting to hold all of the parties, including Israel, Hamas, and the Palestinian Authority, and all of the international partners, to the commitments of the peace plan. It was a deal and a resolution that sets out important markers for how the next phase of the ceasefire and the plan to rebuild Gaza could unfold. But there is a lot of uncertainty and vagueness in how the international community, not least the United States, will actually go about implementing these plans. And the extent to which many of these provisions are implemented will ultimately affect the impact on the people of Gaza and their ability to recover from nearly 2 years of war.
What do you think are the biggest uncertainties there?
So the resolution that was just adopted puts a lot of responsibility and authority in this Board of Peace, which is an executive administration to be chaired by Donald Trump that will have a mandate for 2 years to oversee Gaza's reconstruction and administration. Right now, we don't know anyone else who will serve on the Board of Peace apart from Donald Trump. The board will not have much accountability to the rest of the international community, and it's unclear what role they will practically serve in overseeing a lot of these responsibilities. The board is also expected to set up the stabilization force, the military body that should be undertaking a number of tasks on the ground in Gaza, but the resolution does not prioritize tasks that at certain points could be fairly different in practice, whether it is meant to primarily be a ceasefire monitoring body or to actually undertake operations that would attempt to demilitarize the strip and disarm Hamas. So a lot of these questions, which members at the UN Security Council were quite uncertain and concerned about, now need to be clarified as the US and its partners begin to put this plan into practice.
How much trust is there at the moment, do you think?
I don't know if there's a lot of trust in how the U.S. is going to implement a lot of this, but practically speaking, a lot of member states assessed that a process where the United States is involved and committed, however imperfect, may be better than one where it's going alone or operating in a completely different direction to the rest of the international community. So I think a lot of member states, including some that we at Crisis Group have spoken to, see this as really one of their last chances for the UN and the wider international community to weigh in on an imperfect peace plan.
What's the humanitarian situation like at the moment for the people of Gaza? What do we know, Daniel?
Our understanding is that it's still incredibly devastating conditions. There is more aid that's being let in to the Gaza Strip from Israel, but it is still not nearly enough to significantly alleviate the famine conditions that had been persisting for months. And as my colleagues tell me, there was a massive flooding in the Gaza Strip just a few days ago from torrential rains that have exacerbated already very difficult conditions. So a fragile ceasefire is one that certainly needs to be protected, because we're already facing very concerning humanitarian conditions that have made life incredibly difficult for those civilians who are still in Gaza.
How unusual is this kind of plan, rather than going through the traditional channels and agencies of the United Nations?
There In the past, the UN Security Council has authorized components of this kind of plan in different ways. So it's not unprecedented for the UN Security Council, for example, to have agreed to set up a transitional administration over a country, or to send a stabilization force that is not UN-led or managed. But the combination of the two, especially in a context like Gaza and the occupied Palestinian territories, which have been the subject of intense diplomatic and military efforts over the past decades, makes for a quite rare situation. And a lot of this now will be outside of the hands of the UN. So member states are going to try to use as much diplomacy with the US and Israel as possible to put some guardrails and have some influence over the process that will be primarily driven by them.
What about the longer term, Daniel? Does this plan give people in Gaza any real path towards stable government and a normal life, or is that still uncertain?
You know, I think the implementation over the next couple of months is going to be key to figuring out what this means for the long-term stability and political future of Gaza. One of the most important debates that took place as council members were negotiating the resolution here in New York was the importance of referencing a political horizon for the Palestinian people and a reference to the viability and necessity of a two-state solution. And this was language that the United States did not originally want in its resolution. But then after lots of pressure from its Arab partners and other members on the Security Council, did make some vague and symbolic references to the importance of eventually the Palestinian people having the right to a Palestinian statehood in the future. And so this political conversation and the diplomacy that will have to follow around it is really going to determine whether this ceasefire just remains on paper and this reconstruction and possible redevelopment of Gaza takes place in a way that is centered around the Palestinian people or continues to be managed primarily by the U.S. and Israel.
What have you made of the responses that there have been from the Israeli government and also from Hamas to the current situation?
I think the diverging statements from Israel and Hamas reflect the lack of detail and ambiguity that was in Trump's plan that they both signed up to in October. And this is why a lot of the details are going to need to be worked out in the future, because it's quite clear that they have very different views about what the plan means in practice and how they will be impacted by it. And the Security Council resolution does nothing to clarify or try to bridge those differences. And so this will really be up to the U.S. and its partners to actually sit down and work the plan out in a way that you can retain the minimal amount of buy-in from both sides. Otherwise, you risk leaning entirely towards one side favoring the outcomes over the other and risking destabilizing what is a very fragile ceasefire at the moment.
Daniel Forty, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it.